Everybody, how's it going? Welcome to episode 53 of Cracking the Spine. I'm Sean.
I'm Zane.
Josh isn't here.
Surprise!
Josh actually texted us a few minutes before the show. He is finally finishing up Abomination and couldn't make it because he's really engrossed in the novel.
He's riveted.
No, that's a lie.
He's not reading.
He's not reading at all. No. He's off being internet famous.
Yes.
At one of his many personal appearances. Where people clamor for his attention.
According to Josh.
And he shirks from it.
Yeah.
Once again, according to as per Josh tells the story. So we're here anyway.
I hate being internet famous.
Oh God, the way people like everything I do.
6 retweets.
we miss you, Josh.
Yeah.
Even though you'll never hear this.
That's right.
But we go on with the first week of the second year. Of Cracking the Spine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
So, Zane.
Yes?
What are you reading?
I'm still reading Devil in the White City, because I'm the new Josh.
Wah. Wah. Good thing Josh isn't here, because he'd be like, oh, look, you can't finish your book either.
But it's good. I like it. It's everything that was promised to me. I just haven't had time to read.
Fair enough. So. All right. But you're digging it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's interesting how... interesting it is.
Okay.
Despite being nonfiction.
Right. Yeah. It's like a work of history, but
yeah.
It's really well researched.
Very well told.
And really well told.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
What about you? What are you reading?
I was reading. I think last week I had just started My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Yeah,
by Grady Hendrix. Which I actually like. I got like 20 pages into it, and then I got distracted by life, as happens.
Yeah.
And sort of like forgot it. So I started it over again and then I read the whole thing in one day.
Wow.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Like Horror Store, his first novel, was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But like it was a pretty, like, I don't want to say formulaic, but it was a Poltergeist story.
Yeah.
With like an interesting little twist on it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't feel like the characters in Horror Store, while they weren't like, it wasn't bad characterizations. Like the story didn't allow them a lot of.
But I honestly cannot remember like. Even what the main character's name was.
Exactly. My Best Friend's Exorcism, it's like the story of four girls who are best friends in high school. I could tell you all their names and like everything about them. And actually now, Zane, I present My Best Friend's Exorcism to you.
Yay!
You can't see it, podcast listeners, but I just put the book into Zane's hand.
Suck it, Josh.
Duh, I wouldn't read it anyway.
I'm excited.
And it's weird because I was actually reading it at the same time as I was also reading, someone had sent us a couple weeks back the novelization of Pump Up the Volume.
And you were finally reading it?
I was sort of, like, parallel reading them.
Okay.
And, I was reading Pump Up the Volume, I mean, full disclosure, sorry podcast listeners, I was reading Pump Up the Volume in the bathroom. And it's really funny because they're both...
That sounds like an episode, bathroom books.
Ooh, write that down. That's a really good idea.
Yes, sir.
It's really interesting because they're both, like, high schools in the 80s, right?
Oh, okay. So,
there's a lot
like
of, like,
weird
really
parallels.
Weird parallel, yeah. like scenery and, like,
yeah.
like the principal characters. Yeah. I'm like, wait, oh, no, this isn't Pump Up the Volume. Like,
when I was in college, I lived in this house with a lot of people, and because there were so many people living in it, like, artifacts, like weird stuff would crop up in like the living room, like in the common areas.
Okay.
And no one could really know like where did that even come from? We don't know. Like someone brought it in or someone got a new thing and they put it in the living room. And so anyway, we ended up with two televisions.
Okay.
And we had a VHS player and a DVD player and at one point even a Laserdisc.
All right.
With a lot of Laserdiscs. I forget where we got them all. Anyway, we started this new thing where we would watch two movies at once.
Okay.
And it was really fun to find, like, which movies went surprisingly well together.
Okay.
And I think our favorite combination was Fear and Loathing alongside Mrs. Doubtfire.
Do you start them, like, at the same time?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And it reminded me of that. Because you end up finding, like, weird
Yeah. Like, the brain. Well, what happens is our brains...
they're connected.
Our brains are wired to look for patterns.
Yeah.
So, but, as a, just, going back to My Best Friend's Exorcism, like, amazing characters, and honestly, like, a really, like, a really heartfelt story.
Okay.
Like, a really, like, very compelling tale about, like, friendship and, like, the bonds of high school, and, like, really awesome horror. Like, really good horror, like, setups and, and things. Yeah.
I'm excited. That's like
My alley. You're gonna dig it.
Yeah.
And then I'm reading also. After I finished Best Friend's Exorcism, I'm reading a book called What If We're Wrong by Chuck Klosterman.
Yeah.
And you know, I used to read Chuck Klosterman when I was like in my early 20s. Chuck, I don't know if you know him, Zane, or listeners, but he's like an essayist. He's a like New York City based. Like I always think of him as moving in those same circles as like Ira Glass and like Sarah Vowell and like the Nouveau like literary roundtable in New York City.
Definitely friends with David Byrne.
Yeah, exactly. And David Sedaris. Yeah. And, well, like they look up to David Byrne. But like, so like the thing about Chuck Klosterman is Chuck Klosterman has a lot of really good ideas.
Okay.
This book is not out yet. Actually, I think I would like to attempt to get Josh to read it. It's an idea. The idea is, what if all of the things that we think are culturally important right now, what is ultimately going to be the things that in 500 years or 1,000 years are remembered?
Okay.
Like, you know, there's only a few, like, writers who have transcended time, like Homer, Shakespeare.
Right.
And who is it, like, we have these ideas that, like, because the New York Times tells us that person X is the most amazing author of last year.
Right.
That's going to be like the telling like part of our history for all of history.
Right.
And his argument is there's no way to know. And it's an interesting like thesis.
Yeah.
The reason I stopped reading Chuck Klosterman is because Chuck Klosterman has his head so far up his own ass.
Okay.
Like he's so impressed with his like knowledge of language and Rolodex of people that he can like draw quotes from.
Right.
Like the idea of the book gets muddled under the language.
Okay.
So it's not for me. I mean, when it comes out, it's probably going to sell like hotcakes.
Right.
But it reminded me like, oh yeah, this is why I don't read Chuck Klosterman anymore.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So I'm leaning towards not reading it anymore.
You're not going to finish it?
No. And then I think I might go back to, what's that one I gave you about the security camera? Sanctuary? Was
Security.
It called? Security, yeah. I think I'm going to read that instead.
Okay.
So anyway. So Josh, maybe I'll loan you a book to never be seen again. Join a head full of ghosts with, you know, in a pile.
Yeah, somewhere. With abomination and something else again.
Whatever. All right, enough poo-pooing, Josh. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, guess what, guys? We got a listener suggestion. Zane, can you do klaxons?
No.
No, all right. We got no klaxons this week, guys. Sorry. That's what you get when Josh has to go be internet famous. But hey, we're still here, and we'll be right back.
Cracking the spine. I'm Zane.
I'm Sean. Josh is still not here.
Josh sucks. Moving on.
We waited like an hour during the break for him to show up, and it didn't happen. And now
Josh,
it's super late.
Josh, where are you?
God, Josh.
We should call him just in case.
He won't answer.
What if he got hurt and he fell on his phone in such a way that it broke, and it broke so that it can only receive calls and not make them? We should call him.
All right, we'll call him. In the next break.
Okay.
All right.
In another hour.
So Zane, what are we talking about this week, and who did it come from?
This came from an email that we got from John Glessner.
Nope, can't do it.
I thought it was okay.
All
I
right.
liked it. And he asked us, what is your favorite or even least favorite cliches, tropes, or archetypes?
Oh, okay. All right. So when we talked about this on text earlier, you just said tropes. Now, archetypes I can get into. But when I researched tropes, I'm like the Wikipedia page was like, it, like similes, metaphors.
Well, the thing
I'm like,
about,
trope, like,
I tried to think about it. I know what he
like
meant
by
tropes.
Like a rising sun?
Because I thought about it like TV tropes.
Okay.
Like if you think about, tropes is sort of
like the King of Queens idea of like the stupid husband with the hot wife.
Exactly. Like we as a culture have like co-opted tropes. It means something slightly different.
Just like
now.
We did with memes.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, when I know what he was asking, and I think he was asking about
archetypes, I think, is more akin to where... Yeah, okay.
Even cliches works pretty well.
Okay, cool.
I mean, we can also talk about...
Just
like,
so we have a common vocabulary going forward.
Literary devices, because I thought about that, too. Okay. You know, if we want to be more academic about it.
All right.
So, go.
All right, well, I mean, this is kind of where I thought we were going with it. The one I've always been a big fan of is end of chapter foreshadowing.
Okay.
Like when a story is being told chronologically.
Like when a chapter has like a little cliffhanger.
Like the end of the chapter, like, you know, I this is not an example from any book, but I'm like, just like,
yeah.
You know, she walked out the front door planning to see him tomorrow. And then the next sentence, the end of the chapter is, but they would never see each other again.
Like Joe Hill does.
Like that, yeah. Like a lot, there's actually a lot of people. Grady Hendrix does it pretty well. There's a lot, and I don't want to, it's not limited to just horror, but like there's this sense of like, oh, okay, I'm getting close to the end of the chapter. Maybe I'll take a break here. Maybe this will be the point when I stop reading for the night. And it's like, oh shit. Why didn't you see her again?
Well, I like that as a device in writing, because it sort of goes against my expectations, because I'm used to writers like foreshadowing and they're like, and she wondered if she'd ever see him again, and they kind of leave it there.
Right.
And so now I'm seeing this crop up more where it's like, she wondered if she'd ever see him again. She wouldn't. He died. And it's like, you just told me.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's, isn't that an important plot point? And it is, but like, it's how it unfolds. And I like that authors are sort of reinforcing that like, you can't necessarily spoil something if it's told well. Like, the experience of, like, even if you go in knowing, like, he dies.
Right.
Like, to experience that person dying is...
I also like the idea of the prologue or introductory chapter of a book being the future. Like, you're meeting the protagonist or a secondary character, like, 40 years after the events of the story.
Yeah.
And you know... if not that they're okay, at least that they got through it, so that as you're reading along in the story, it's the idea that, like, all the things that happen in between are going to alter that person in some way, they're going to go on their journey, but at the end, they survive, and how?
Okay.
Rather than having that suspense the whole time of, like the anxiety of, like, oh my god, what's going to happen?
Yeah. I don't know, I like being reassured by things because I get really anxious about everything.
Yeah.
So, like, I like having that reassurance. But there is something about a prologue that is, like, clearly set after the events of the book. And it's sort of like, why would you tell me that? You know, like, I know I just said that thing about spoilers, but I don't know. Like, there's something about reading that it's not my favorite.
See, I love it because
it that way.
Like, I keep thinking, like, as I'm reading along in the story, like, all right, how are we going to get
back
there?
How are we going to connect?
How
those
are we
going
to get
yeah.
back there? Because this is
that.
Not the person I met at the beginning of the book. Like, this
yeah.
is a much younger, much more naive version of that person that I met.
Yeah.
How are we going to get from here to from there to here?
Mm-hmm.
I guess is the way to think of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had trouble thinking of like my favorite tropes, but I could definitely think of my least favorite.
Well, I could toss out a few more favorites, because there's a lot of stuff that I like in books. I love phonetic dialogue.
Yes.
Like, when people from the set, like, when, it, like, y'all is written y'all.
Yeah.
Or, like, I mean, you know, I say this a lot, but
Irvine Welsh
is a
absolutely.
Master of it.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Palahniuk is a master of writing conversational dialogue in a way that makes you hear the people's voices in your heads. And I think that's used to some effect in Devil in the White City. Because whereas it's not dialogue, it's like printed word.
Right.
And people wrote and actually spoke so differently
yes.
back then. Like, sentences were structured differently.
Yeah.
Everybody was an English, like, I don't want to say everybody was an English major, but there was far less slang. There was far more correct grammar being used by everyone at all times.
Right.
So when, like, it helps to prop up a story like Devil in the White City of a historical time that actually took place, to, like, see and hear, like, that big bombastic, you know, Colombian sort of, not the nation, but, like, the idea of, like, Colombia as the beacon of America.
Right.
That, like, that's a trope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
For sure.
What are some of the ones you don't like, Zane?
The one that immediately came to mind was red herrings.
Okay.
Because, especially nowadays, everyone is always trying to put a twist on things.
Yeah.
And sometimes people try to do that, like, instead of thinking of a creative twist, they just try to misdirect you. And sometimes the misdirection is, like, it's just lying.
Yep.
You know, like, they just tell you something that's not true.
Or it's so obvious that it's going to go the other way.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, you're setting me up to be let down
here. When you can tell that it's like, that's a red herring. Right. I'm not supposed to. Like, when it's executed well, that's different. But I feel like nowadays there's such a, we as an audience expect twists and we expect to be surprised at the end. And so I feel like a lot of times less competent authors are trying to insert those things in their stories and they use these red herrings to like, to just lie to you.
Right.
Like, this is the way it was. Just kidding. No, it wasn't. I misdirected you. It's like, that's not.
In a similar vein, I am not a fan of, and it's becoming more and more prevalent because of the success of certain titles, but the unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
The story that is told in the first person voice.
Yeah.
By, like, I don't know, an alcoholic, or there was one recently where the main character was, he had Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
And it's like, you don't find that stuff out until you're well into the story.
Yeah.
So everything that you've been told previous to that is suspect.
Right.
And not to say that that in and of itself is a bad, like, device or that it can't be used to success. But what happened is one novel, The Girl on the Train, used that device, sold a gazillion copies, and now every publisher is auctioning and bidding on manuscripts like that, you know, with the unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
And, you know, some are worth reading and some aren't. And they've all gotten painted with this same brush.
Right.
Of like, you know, I'm not interested. I don't necessarily need to know that everything I'm reading is quote unquote true.
Right.
But like the idea of a narrative is like, keep me guessing with the plot. Don't keep me guessing with lies.
Right.
Yeah. Like out and out, like that's not the thing that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that it again, like it just that desire to surprise you,
right.
I think, you know, is in the wrong hands.
It comes off too heavy handed. It's like you're very deliberately.
Yeah.
You're like instead of using that in support of your story, of your plot, that is now your story or your plot.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one that I kept thinking of, I don't know what the name for this trope would be, and it maybe isn't an actual trope, but it's in my head it is. The best way I can describe it is when I was little, you missed the watching this particular show on TV, but, I used to watch SNCC. And during...
That's Saturday Night Nick, for those of you who aren't there.
During my generation of SNCC, was after, like, all that and everything, and when they gave Kenan and Kel their own show.
Right.
And I hated watching Kenan and Kel because it gave me crazy anxiety. Because they would set up this storyline, and it would be like, Kel's just going to watch the cash register for a second. Everything's fine. No big deal. And they were setting everything up to go horribly wrong. And I could see that setup. And I could see that, like, they were setting up this instance where everything would start to fall apart and the characters would have to try and fix it. And could they fix it? I don't know. And that, like, I knew that that was going to happen. That anticipation gave me insane anxiety. And anything that even resembles that kind of setup just drives me nuts.
Do you think, like, are there any...
A lot of... I can't think of any specific books off the top of my head.
Okay.
But there's a lot of stuff that I watch and a lot of stuff that I read where I, like, there was one... I forget what it was called. I just recently read a zombie book that did this. And it, like, the first quarter of the book was just... Everything was fine. People were going about their lives. And it was...
Was it The Girl with All the Gifts?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
I have it in my notes somewhere.
All right, don't worry about it.
Through. But everything was fine. And they, like, set up this family scene and dynamics between the family. But, like, I knew going in generally what the book was about. I wasn't exactly sure how we would get there. But it was, like... I knew that I was being set up for all of these things to crumble.
Right.
And
like they force you to fall in love with people that you know aren't going
to
be
around.
Yeah,
or even just to like become comfortable in like a scenario.
Right.
You're like, oh, okay, well, we're just having dinner. Just kidding. Everything's falling apart. And like that anticipation, that gives me crazy anxiety. I can't deal with it. It's worse. I can deal with it better in books, like more forgiving in books, but like in TV shows or movies, like forget it. I can't do it.
Fair enough.
And a lot of kids shows follow that formula.
Well, because I mean, your Kenan and Kel example.
Yeah.
I knew it. I wasn't a fan of it for other reasons. But, you know, the way that those scenes played out was always very slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't, you know, they weren't like, it wasn't like, oh no, who has the missing $20 bill? It was more like, I'm going to leave this stack of custard cream pies right here. Yeah. Be right back.
Yeah, it's that but kids
love,
anxiety.
I mean, little kids love that shit. Like, when the pies start falling. And
I get it. But it's, that's,
what
and
happened?
I understand it, but that's just the clearest example. That's the first time, I always think of it as, like, that Kenan and Kel thing, because that was the first time I realized that, like, things gave me anxiety.
Right.
And I couldn't deal with it. I know it's a weird example.
No, it's totally fine. It's absolutely, I mean, look, if that's what you don't like, it's what you don't like. This is our show, Josh.
Josh.
Or John, right? Was this John that suggested it, too?
Yeah.
Thanks, John. But the other one that just sprung to mind, and I'm hard pressed to think of an example. I can think of maybe one or two. Is the idea of the savior child, like not necessarily in a religious way.
Yeah.
But like when all adults are too stupid to know anything in a story, like when things start to fall apart or when things start to go bad, and it's just the innocent, brilliant little child who comes through with the most clear-minded insight.
Like in Signs.
Like in Signs, exactly, yeah. Or like in, I was thinking Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so, like, there's, I mean, you know, maybe it's because I read a lot of horror.
It's heavy-handed, though.
Falls on a lot of tropes. It's so heavy-handed.
It's heavy-handed to be like, well, her innocence gave her insight or whatever.
It's so clearly symbolic and so, like, it's so much, it's so easy. It's such an easy thing to do to go, well, adults fuck the world up, so we have to depend on the clean slate of a child to fix it.
Right.
And again, it's one of those things that in the right hands can be used very deftly and very well. But like, you know, the other way with it is like it becomes a crutch.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like if you're in the third quarter of like an end of the world book or like even like stakes are getting raised and there's a kid still part of the story, you know.
Yeah.
Like you just know. Like when's he gonna pipe up and go like, maybe you guys should go see a counselor.
Well, it's a little like Deus Ex Machina. Like it's a little
It's exactly what it is. Yeah.
You know, like it's a miracle.
Right.
We're all saved.
And like I know a story, you know, most stories have to have it. Most stories have to have like that Deus Ex Machina. That God has to come through in some way. Like something larger than the characters in the story has to occur in order to have some sort of resolution.
And I don't have a problem with a well-executed Deus Ex Machina. Like, that's fine with me. But when it gets heavy-handed or when it's like, and then this demigod showed up.
Right.
You know, and it's like, what?
And the like, and then like the squeaky clean happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the magic sword ending where everyone comes back to life.
Right, exactly.
The one I was thinking of, obviously I wrote down ticking clock because that's another one that gives me anxiety when people are like running against a clock. I can't do anything where like time is running out.
Did you ever see that movie with Johnny Depp where it's done in real time? Like I think it might be called Out of Time. They kidnap his daughter and they force him. He has to go assassinate the governor. And he has, like, 90 minutes to do it. And the movie takes place over 90 minutes. And there's clocks all over the place. It would drive you crazy. You could not handle it. It's not a very good movie, but it's really interesting because it's, like, this idea that, you know, 3 minutes when you're watching are 3 minutes on screen.
Yeah. That sounds like, honestly, that just sounds, like, agonizing. Like, even, it doesn't even sound like, wow, fast-paced. It sounds like, I don't want to watch 3 minutes of real time. It doesn't sound that interesting.
It's pretty good. It's Johnny Depp. Young Johnny Depp. So he's
super
handsome.
Say, yeah, all right.
I got you. I got you. But yeah, like the idea that like Stephen King does it all the time.
Yeah.
Did you read Mr. Mercedes?
No, I didn't.
Like, the last quarter of Mr. Mercedes is that typical thing he does where, like, the event, like, the mass killing is going to happen and only our hero knows about it. So he gets in his car to race off to stop it, but then his car gets into an accident.
Good. Dude, that stuff gives me like, crazy and then, anxiety.
Like,
I can't
the kid
it.
He has to pick up, his parents aren't letting him out. And it's like, and then you cut back to the guy, like, you know, with the bomb strapped to him and he's like getting inside. And it's like, no, you gotta get there faster.
Yeah, dude.
Like, he's a master of that.
He is. And like, again, so a lot of this stuff, I can absolutely forgive if it's well written.
No, but I mean, it's anxiety inducing to be sure.
Yeah.
Like, that's, again, it's that thing of like, I can't put the book down because if I put the book down,
see, that's the kind of thing where wins. I get so crazy anxious. Sometimes I'll like start skimming instead. I'm like, okay, because I need to like get through it because it's too much for me.
All
right. I'm a crazy person.
What else do you have in your notes?
The other one in my notes, was the eucatastrophe.
The what?
That thing where, like, towards the end of a story, there's, like, a climactic event that you think is going to change everything, and everything's going to go terribly wrong, and then it actually has a fortuitous outcome. So that term was actually coined by Tolkien.
Oh. What's it called?
Eucatastrophe.
Is that one word?
Yeah.
Okay.
I used a Tolkien example for this. Like, at the end of Lord of the Rings, when Gollum gets the ring.
Right.
But then he falls in.
Okay, yeah.
And it's like, no! Like, the whole world, for a moment, is like, it goes over to Sauron. Sauron wins, like, this is the end of the world. And then it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but, wait, you're saying that something that you do or do not like?
I do like it.
Oh, okay.
I like it, because... Because
that's, I mean, that, you, the way Tolkien did it was fucking brilliant.
It's brilliant, like, writing, and it's that moment of, like, almost everything slips away. And,
right.
And for a moment, the entire narrative of the story changes. Like, the whole outcome is different.
Yeah.
For just a brief moment in time, and then it ends up, everything's okay. But it's a, when, as always, when well written and well used,
right.
It's brilliant narrative.
Yes. Know? You know what trope I'm sick of? I don't even know if this counts as a trope or if it's just a genre unto itself now. Post-apocalyptic worlds. Like, the idea that we're so bereft of ideas of the future that every future that we can tell is a desert world or the sea levels have risen and Atlantic City is now like a swampland. Like, it's, again, when it's done well, it's good. But it's like the unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
You know, World War Z hit and The Walking Dead hit, and then all of a sudden it was like, bam, every book is about the end, the end of the world.
Yeah.
Just, I'm done with it. I'm done with it, world. Don't give me another one unless it's good.
I guess, I don't know. Some of those trends, like, I think we're all well past, like, supernatural trends and zombie trends. And
vampires. And, yeah.
And, now we're getting, I agree, I think we're all kind of getting past, like, apocalypse trends.
I think the new trend in sci-fi, I mean, if two books qualify as a trend, is the,
yes,
like, thousands of years in the future story. Like, Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson and Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson. Like, what is the world going to be like in the year 5000?
Yeah.
You know, based on nothing, well, based on speculation.
We've talked about this before. Do you think it's possible to write a book that's, like, 80 years in the future that isn't, like, right now, that isn't post-apocalyptic, without being corny?
I think it is. I do. I think that, you know...
Do you think there's anyone out there who could write that book right now?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. I mean, not that I know of.
Because if they can, they should probably get to it.
They should probably get to it. Because I'd like to read that book. And I'd like to sell that book.
But, like, do you think, like, Neal Stephenson could write a book? Because, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think, like, back in, again, we've talked about this, but back in, like, the golden age of science fiction, they were writing, you know, the year 2000, and it was only 80 years.
And it was flying cars, and
it was optimistic to a degree.
But I think that, I mean, I think that Neal Stephenson already kind of wrote that book. It's already a little bit dated, but the Diamond Age, I would not describe as post-apocalyptic. I mean, the Diamond Age, you know, it, I think it takes some trends and moves them into the future. I mean, pollution is awful in that world, yeah, and class segregation is even worse than it is now, but, like, there's no mass extinction, mm-hmm, there's no, you know, there's no, what, like, sea level rise to the point where, yeah, it's the only thing that, that's the thing, where it's the only thing that people think or talk about in the modern time.
Right.
Like, in the current time when the story is written, the world is still just the world. You, right, know what I mean? Like, yeah, it, you know, getting rid of the idea that maybe someday there will be a nuclear war, mm-hmm, or maybe someday there will be a, like, a meteor strike. I think that for the most part, life will sort of, you know, continue to evolve the same way that it has.
Right.
Cities will grow larger. You know, farmland will ebb and flow.
Yeah.
You know, the pollution problem will peak and maybe topple over. Maybe a solution. Well, not a solution, but like a workaround will be found. But I think that, you know, by and large, 80 years from now is going to look much like 80 years ago look to now, you know, like,
yeah,
it's still cities, it's still roads, it's still people, it's not, you know, caravans of, it's not Mad Max.
Yeah.
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 I think. God, I hope. Because I have kids.
Yeah.
All right. On that note.
Done.
Cool. Tropes done. What's up next? Oh, I know. A break. Hey guys, welcome back to episode 53, Cracking the Spine, segment 3. Sean.
Zane.
Still no Josh.
I can't do Josh.
He's not here. He's, oh, I wasn't going to do Josh Butt.
Oh, I mean, Josh Butt isn't here either.
No, he's also off being internet robot famous.
Yeah.
Robot internet famous. Zane, you remember the title of that book?
Yeah, it's The Missing by Sarah Langan.
That's the, we talked about it on episode, what did you say, 31?
31. Right. Yeah, and I think maybe like, back to episode, like, 29.
All right, so that's the zombie one.
Yeah, that's the one about zombies.
Okay, cool. Before we get to the usual stuff that we do, I want to introduce a new segment. If Josh was here, I'd ask him to do a klaxon noise, but he's not.
Klaxons!
There it is. Where I, you know, I've gotten some grief in the past from listeners for talking about books that haven't been released yet, and I would like to tell you guys about a couple of books that were released this week that I've talked about in the past. So if you've been listening and you've ever heard me talk about A Decent Ride by Irvine Welsh, that is now out on shelves. That was the one about Juice Terry, who is a character introduced in several other Irvine Welsh novels. Forewarning, super graphic. In just about...
Oh, yeah, that one was gross.
Yeah, in just about every regard you can think of. I mean, like, from any... Yeah, like, anything that can happen does...
anything that you think is gross is in this
book. Is in this book, totally, yeah. So, if that's your thing... I mean, it's actually... It's a little overlong, but it's not bad. It's good if you like Irvine Welsh. The other one is... And I highly, highly recommend this novel. It's called Lovecraft Country by Matt Ruff. That's the one about the segregated 1950s... And,
that's right.
Yeah, the black family that, I don't want to say too much about it, but there's like some Lovecraftian horror elements to it, and just the horror of America that was the 1950s for African Americans. So that's out this week too. Both available at doylestownbookshop.com. You'll find the Matt Ruff book on my staff picks. And so that's it for the stuff that came out this week. But I'm going to try to remember to do this a little bit more often so that people know when they can get their hands on stuff that I talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. So also... Valentine's are out there?
Oh, yeah. And, well, hopefully by the time this gets posted, everyone has gotten their Valentine's. But some Valentine's we handmade and signed. All three of us signed every single Valentine that we sent out. So some of them took a little bit longer to send out. And, you know, depending on when we got
the
address
the request. So.
But they have all been sent. So hopefully, you know, give it some time. But hopefully everyone has them by the time this gets posted.
We'd love to see your pictures. Feel free to tweet them to us.
Absolutely.
At Cracking Spine or post them to our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Or email them to us. And speaking of email pictures, we got, I don't know if you saw, Zane, we got email, or did we talk about this last week already? The pictures from
Katie. Yeah, we did.
We did talk about it. That's what I thought. Never mind. I had a lot on my mind last week. Cool. So, yeah, that's it. Again, we've already got a topic for maybe for next week with bathroom books.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. Yeah.
excuse me, you're welcome, because I said it. It was, you know, it was a joint effort. It was really, it was everybody except for Josh.
So you know what, world? You're welcome.
That's right. But you're also welcome to send us more ideas, because...
because we always need them.
We're 53 episodes in, and we got another 53 at least to do.
And so. Oh God, we need something to talk about.
That's right. But we'll be back next week to talk about it. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll talk more next week. Zane, let's give Josh a call.
Okay.
All right, thanks for listening. We'll talk later. I hope he's okay.
I hope his phone isn't broken.
That kind of broken that can only send calls?
Do you think he'll pick up?
I don't know. It's ringing. The suspense is making me anxious.
He fucking hates us.
Hey, Josh, leave a message.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Josh, it's Cracking the Spine calling. It's Sean.
And Zane.
We just, we're doing the podcast and you're not here.
You suck.
Okay, that's it. Talk to you. We'll talk more next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.